Fantasy football leagues are won on the waiver wire and with trades and with savvy starter sit decisions. The Fantasy Football Today podcast will help you along the way with the best advice on how to manage your team and dominate your league. With 8 episodes per week, Fantasy Football Today is the only resource you'll need. Start sit, grade the trade, fantasy cops to settle your league disputes, and so much more. Check out Fantasy Football Today anywhere podcasts are found.
How's your mental health? I'm listening with Billie Eilish.
I feel like I spent a lot of time thinking about happiness and how it's just like it fluctuates, and everyone thinks if you're one thing, you're going to be that forever and you're never going to be anything else. And it's really not true. Like, happiness is temporary, but also so is like misery, and things just like morph and change. It just doesn't stay. It goes up and goes down and things change. And like, that's how life works.
Explore more at imlistening.org.
Joshua, how you been?
I'm doing well. It's great to connect up with you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on. Who's the better football team? Is it Michigan or Ohio State?
I go 50-50. It depends on which way the wind blows, depends on what side of the bed I wake up on, honestly. And I mean that so truthfully. I think these are two extremely good football teams. Michigan right now, I think, still has another level left, man, on that offense. J.J. McCarthy has not been fully unleashed. They've been heavily reliant on that run game, which has been stellar and defensively. You can make an argument that this defensive line and the way that they've been playing is better than what they had a year ago with a couple of first-round talents up there. But the Ohio State Buckeyes, man, C.J. Stroud, 24 TDs against 3 interceptions. You got Travion Henderson, preseason All-American, but then this Mayan Williams guy shows up. He's averaging 7.7 yards per carry. Jackson Smith and Jigba's down. That doesn't matter. You got Marvin Harrison Jr. You got Julian Fleming. You got Emeka Buka. You got Cade Stover now at tight end. And this is a statistical top 10 total defense in the country. Both of these teams are phenomenal. Either one of them could win that game in Columbus at the end of the year. Either one of them is going to win the Big Ten championship. I don't think there's another challenger out there. And quite frankly, I think both of them look like playoff caliber teams right now.
Do you think there's a chance for both to get into the college football playoff? Because I do think it's inevitable that they're both going to be undefeated when they meet up on Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, I believe the same thing, too, about them being undefeated when they meet up. And they would need some chaos to go down around college football. I know that, folks are very high on Tennessee right now, as they should be, and what they did against Alabama was great. Hendon Hooker, phenomenal talent. Defensively, they need to be helped along. Reminds me a lot of some of the recent Ohio State teams with the defensive challenges, maybe some of the Oklahoma teams under Lincoln Riley with great quarterback play and not great defenses. But you got a couple teams from the SEC in Tennessee and Georgia sitting right there. Clemson, it feels like if they get over this hump with Syracuse over the weekend, they're going to be right in position to make it back to the playoff. Could a UCLA sneak into the conversation out west? We don't know. And TCU's playing some good football right now, too. So to answer your question, a lot of things would have to happen. But, I mean, if we're talking about the best teams and that game Thanksgiving weekend is close, and whoever wins that game goes on to win the Big Ten running away, I think it's going to be very hard to say that both of those teams would not be deserving to be in the playoff.
Yeah, what I think probably happens is Clemson's undefeated, so they'll get in. You'll get two SEC teams in, and then it will be one Big Ten school, either Michigan or Ohio State. And it kind of sucks that that could be the case, because we're then talking about maybe no Big 12, no Pac-12 in the college football playoff. And if you look at the depth of those conferences this year, the Big 12 has been really good, and the Pac-12 maybe could be even better than the Big 12.
Totally agree with you. I mean, I look at Big 12 football right now, and it's been totally fun because you know that you're going to get competitive matchups every weekend. TCU has been a fun team to watch, and Oklahoma State's been great to watch. By the way, you got a couple of teams in Kansas that have been extremely fun stories.
Yeah.
And Texas with Quinn Ewers is explosive. And then you go out west, man, and early on this year, I was down on that conference, especially the way Oregon got their doors blown off by Georgia. But look at that team creeping back into the top 10 of college football. Utah made a statement against USC. I mentioned UCLA. DTR has been great for them. Zach Charbonnet is running all over that conference. Like, there are some really good games going on in the Big 12 and the Pac-12. But when you're talking about the highest end of college football, it really exists in the Big 10 right now. The SEC's got it. And then Clemson out of the ACC is always going to give you some good football.
Joshua Perry, we'll circle back to the Big 12 and the Pac-12 in just a bit, as you have some big matchups there this weekend. But getting back to Michigan and Ohio State, Ohio State's defense, statistically, like you said, have been really good. But when the moment gets the brightest, where's the confidence level going up against that Michigan team with that defense, knowing the way last year that Michigan really bullied Ohio State, and I think their offense for Michigan is even better than what it was a year ago?
Yeah, I think Ohio State has an edge now. I think they're a way tougher team, and that is part of the reason why they've improved so much defensively. I think schematically, too, it's a really challenging defense to game plan for, and it's something that you don't see quite often with a three safety look, and this is a front that goes between a three down front and a four down front, and the linebackers are extremely aggressive, but they play with a lot of discipline. So I think they're way better equipped than they were a year ago to handle what Michigan is bringing. And I know for a fact that this team does not want to be run over again. But when you look at what Michigan did a week ago to Penn State, man, 418 yards
it was
on
mayhem.
The ground. Are you kidding? Like, I mean, whatever they wanted on the ground, they were going to get. And that is where this game becomes a clash of the Titans to me. Because now you do have a tough Ohio State defense, and albeit they haven't been challenged yet with the competition, that's going to come. And you got this Michigan team that, again, is edgy, and they're playing old-school Jim Harbaugh football. And I believe that this is what people nationally recognize this rivalry to be. And quite, I mean, a lot of us want it to be that, and I think we're going to get it this year.
When you look at Ryan Day, he's done a really good job, obviously, at Ohio State, but they haven't won a national championship with him. How much pressure is starting to grow inside the Ohio State community where they know they have a really damn good coach, but they're wondering if that guy can be great and win it all?
I think this is the year that a lot of people are looking at for Ohio State to win the title, just, you know, being around that program and knowing what the expectations are. Ryan Day made it very clear, too, that his expectation is to win a championship. And he even talked about going 11-2 last year, winning a Rose Bowl, and he had to clean house on half of his staff, and it wasn't good enough. And there were a lot of rumblings around town and people that were disappointed. And that's just the territory right now. Made national championship appearance in 2020 season. I mean, that season was a crapshoot. So it's, you know, people put less weight on that. This seems like a great opportunity because Ohio State is more complimentary than it's been in years past. Again, we mentioned the defense and the improvements there. One of the big things offensively is the run game and how aggressive Ohio State has been on the ground. But also, if you look formationally, Ohio State is getting into 12 personnel, so it's one back, two tight ends, and at times even 13 personnel, which is one back and three tight ends, and they'll motion one of the tight ends into the backfield to play like a fullback. So essentially, two backs, two tight ends. This is big boy, big on big football. They didn't have that in the arsenal a year ago, and that becomes a difference too. Not only is this an explosive, high-flying offense, best-scoring offense in the country, but now it's an offense that says, listen, if we want to slow this game down and we want to punch somebody in the face, we can get that done too.
Do you think it's with 100% certainty that Harbaugh is definitely going to be back next year and maybe he doesn't flirt with the NFL once again this offseason?
I mean, I thought it was a little bit curious last year that he did it, and I understand why. And there was a time to leave. I believe it would have been after the successes that they had a year ago. It was unexpected for me in knowing what he had developed and built within that program. The fact that he's kept it together this year, I think, is one of the big storylines. And if Brett Bielema wasn't coaching the way that he is at Illinois, I think Jim Harbaugh would be the front runner for Big Ten Coach of the Year for just keeping his locker room together. If the opportunity presents itself, I think that's where he ultimately would like to be. But I think he understands how good he has it right now at Michigan. The way that this program is rolling, the national attention they're getting, it seems like every week, the Big Noon Fox crew has been with them, and they're getting that national platform that they've had so much in the past. It just seems like a great situation right now. And it would take a really enticing NFL situation, in my opinion, for him to consider leaving again.
Joshua Perry here with us. You got the whiteout of Penn State this weekend, Minnesota, Penn State. It's expected that Sean Clifford is going to start. Do we eventually see a start for Drew Aller this year? Because I know you want to be loyal to a guy that's been there forever. I think, though, it would help them for next year to start getting Drew Aller on the field a little bit more.
I think for the young player to develop his skill set, especially if you feel like this year you're not going to achieve the things that you set out to, which it seems like competing in the Big Ten Championship would look like it's out. And it's just one loss, right? And it seems like it's doomsday. But the way that other teams are playing around them, I think the writing's on the wall there. So college football playoff would be out of question at that point, too. maybe you consider it. But I like to frame it like this. Sean Clifford is a tough, gutsy quarterback. I've watched him in many situations go and do the things that he's needed to do for the team to win. You look at week one against Purdue for that example. Late game situation, marches his team down the field efficiently, throws a touchdown pass under duress. That was great football out of him. What Michigan exposed is not that Sean Clifford can't play at a high level, in my opinion. He struggled in that football game. What it exposed is that offensive line that hasn't been doing him favors for many years did not do him any favors in that game. And that is still an issue for this Penn State team. So I think there's a balance between getting your young quarterback reps and preparing for the future. And also, you don't want to hurt that guy's confidence by putting him out there behind an offensive line that is inconsistent at best. So that will be a difficult decision. And this wideout game between Penn State and Minnesota a couple of weeks ago, man, I would have been licking my chops to watch this one. The shine is off of it, which is a shame because the expectations coming in for these two teams were sky high.
When you take a glance, Joshua Perry at Alabama, they were playing with fire, and then they got burnt last week. They almost still won the game if they just make a kick, and then the defense crumbled in the final 15 seconds. For Bama at the end of the year, like at the end of the conference championship season, how do you think we're talking about Alabama?
I mean, this is the biggest thing that I see with Alabama is it's a team that hurts itself. And I'll also go out on the limb and say they should have lost to Texas. If Quinn Ewers was healthy that whole game, they'd be a two-loss team right now.
Agreed. If Jimbo calls a better play in the A&M game, they probably should have lost that game too.
I mean, the conversation about Jimbo Fisher as a play caller, I mean, we need to talk about that because he needs to hand the sticks to somebody else, neither here nor there. Totally agree with you. That was an Alabama team that had double-digit penalties against Texas, an Alabama team that had double-digit penalties against Tennessee. The great ones don't do that. And it is so unlike a Nick Saban coach team to be that undisciplined, especially in big games. And so I think that's their biggest issue to me at this point is can you not do things to hurt yourself? And if they can get that part figured out, they're plenty enough talented, and I think that they have a staff that can make enough adjustments. They've got the quarterback. They've got the running back. And even with a wide receiver room that I think is subpar for what Alabama standards are, this is a team that can go out and compete. But if they continue to hurt themselves, it is going to be one of those years that Nick Saban would like to forget about.
If you had to just give me your four teams right now, who are your four teams at the end of the year?
Man, now we're getting into a tough situation. I'm rolling with, and this is not in specific order, I believe Ohio State wins the Big Ten. I don't think that they are going to allow what happened to them in that Michigan game to happen again this year. I'll take Clemson because it feels like once they get over this Syracuse hump, they'll be fine the rest of the season. This is where it gets tricky. I like Georgia out of the SEC. Tennessee to me is a tough one because I think that their defense is miserable in the back end. You're talking about 129 in passing defense. They're 102 or something like that. And in total defense, it's not good. But I feel like they could also sneak in there. So give me Ohio State, give me Clemson, give me Georgia. And I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'll say that UCLA makes a run and they get in.
Wow. UCLA over Tennessee. Is Chip Kelly back? He's had a great year this year. Last year was a step in the right direction. He's got a team undefeated. Going back home against the Ducks this weekend, what makes you so confident about Chip and the squad that he has?
I think that they have an experienced quarterback who's playing extremely good football right now. He's efficient. He's taking care of the ball. I don't know what his high end is, but whatever he's doing right now, he's starting to maximize himself, and I think that's important. DTR is a game changer. And then I mentioned Charbonnet, what he's been able to do in the run game. So now you have a multifaceted offense. Defensively, they've been solid all year long, too. So going to Oregon is tough, though. Oregon is not a team that loses at home very often. I think they're in the 20s on their home win streak right now. So that's going to be a challenge. But UCLA, I think, is equipped to get it done. And if they do that, they can make a run the rest of the year.
When you get to Texas, Oklahoma State this weekend, how concerned are you with Oklahoma State after blowing that game last week to TCU? And then give me a thought or two about Quinn Ewers and what he needs to do in these final five games to kind of distance himself in the competition in the summer with Arch Manning coming in.
Yeah, so for Oklahoma State, their defense to me has taken a step back, and that's going to be the biggest key in this game because of the guy that you mentioned, Quinn Ewers, and I'll get into him and Sark in just a sec. Very nervous for them. And I think that Texas is honestly the better team in this game, that Quinn Ewers is now fully healthy and ready to go. And the combination of Steve Sarkisian, who in my mind is in the running, him, Ryan Day, a couple other guys, as play calling head coaches, his play calling is ridiculous. And I did a breakdown just because I wanted to see what was wrong with Oklahoma of the Texas-Oklahoma game. And any play that Steve Sarkisian drew up, he had guys running wide open. Every single play, he knows exactly where to attack coverage is. He has a great feel for what's coming from the defense. And now he's got a quarterback in Quinn Ewers who can go out there and execute it at a high level. And I believe this becomes a very sticky situation because Arch Manning is highly touted and he's got great pedigree. Obviously, we know about his family members. But it's going to be hard for Quinn Ewers not to be the guy for the job next year if he just continues to go out there and execute what Steve Sarkisian draws up. To me, it's a pretty simple equation, is don't make the game too confident for your young quarterback and keep finding ways to get your talent open downfield, and they've done that so far.
Kansas State, TCU, I can't wait for this one coming up 8 p.m. Eastern on Saturday night. What's the difference in that game?
Yeah, so I love Adrian Martinez. It was a pleasure to cover him when he was playing in the Big Ten, and I like the story arc for him right now, being able to go back and have some redemption. Kansas State, not like a high-end team. They do some things really well. I don't think they play football to hurt themselves, but at the same time, when you're talking about TCU and the way that they've been playing right now, it just feels like TCU's got an edge in this one. I've got a close friend who's on the inside of the TCU program, and I texted him a week and a half ago, and I asked, I said, what's the difference for you guys right now? And basically what he said is they've always had good talent in that program. They are maximizing that talent with their strength coach right now, who he believes to be one of the best in America, but also said the change in leadership, and it wasn't a knock on what Gary Patterson was doing, because obviously that guy's legendary around there, but it was just time for a new voice in the front of the room, and that's worked wonders with their players. So I think that this is a team now that also has a purpose and a different motivation, and that is a really hard edge to beat.
Before we let you run, Joshua Perry, when we talk about jobs, Wisconsin, I expect Jim Leonard to get the job. I think you would assume so as well. How about Nebraska? You have a few names that you like for the Nebraska job.
Nope, I have no idea what they're going to do. Do you go with a Leipold and see if you can get a guy who's had experience winning on different levels and has brought a Kansas team? And what a shame that Daniels is hurt right now, because that was a really fun story. But, you know, brought them back to life. Do you maybe end up trying to go for a hot shot coordinator, a guy with less experience, but somebody who you feel like can reinvigorate things with more creativity, a little bit younger, more energy into that program? It's not to say that Scott Frost was an old guy, but it felt like the energy was certainly deflated out of that program. So I don't know how they attack it. And
what about Bill O'Brien?
So this becomes an interesting one, because Bill O'Brien, to me, I think is just a little bit old school. And I know guys who played for him at Penn State that absolutely love him, and he's a guy who knows how to build programs. So from that regard, I think it's spot on. But at a place like Nebraska, I think you gotta be extremely creative to maximize recruiting. Is he a guy who's going to do that at an extremely high level? I'll end you with this on Nebraska. I talked to guys who are currently in coaching and guys who have coached before, and I asked them what they think about the Nebraska job. And I literally get a 50-50 mixed bag from them. Some guys think that it is still the job that it was back in the 90s. Other guys think that Nebraska is just a tough place to be able to have success against the expectations of that program. So whoever takes that job has to understand, eyes wide open, what they're walking into.
Joshua Perry, you always kill when you join us. Appreciate the time. We'll be having you on once again soon, I'm sure.
Just let me know. Appreciate you.
Hey, I'm Thamie Redwood, host of the podcast Beyond Black History Month. Here's reason number 568 million of why you should be listening. From in-depth reporting on the shortage of black sperm to how one House of the Dragon star is dealing with online trolls who don't love seeing black dragon riders.
I can't lose sleep over that, over worrying about things that are beyond my control.
Listen and subscribe to Beyond Black History Month on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fantasy football leagues are won on the waiver wire and with trades and with savvy starter sit decisions. The Fantasy Football Today podcast will help you along the way with the best advice on how to manage your team and dominate your league. With 8 episodes per week, Fantasy Football Today is the only resource you'll need. Start sit, grade the trade, fantasy cops to settle your league disputes, and so much more. Check out Fantasy Football Today anywhere podcasts are found.
How's your mental health? I'm listening with Luke Combs.
I am somebody who has struggled with anxiety a lot. A couple ways or tools, I guess you would say, to maintain my mental health is making myself aware to the things that I know I'm prone to. Information is key for things like that, and knowing what you're dealing with and how they operate. Being aware of the way your mind works in certain situations has been the most important thing for me.
More at imlistening.org. Talk saves lives.